This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalby Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
The night sky for July 2013. Well, sadly, of course, at this time of year, we either have to wait up pretty late or get up pretty early to see a dark sky. And from the very north of Scotland, it probably never gets truly dark. But let's suppose we do stay up. As the sun sets and twilight gradually deepens the sky, we can see Leo setting over in the west, followed by Bootes of the bright star Arcturus. Over to its left, we will see lovely little circlet of stars, arc, called Corona Borealis, the Northern Crown. Up to its left is Hercules, with a very nice object I'll come to in the highlights of the month. And then further over, towards the southeast, and rising ever higher in the sky, is a lovely region of the sky containing the constellations of Cygnus the Swan, Lyra the Lyre, and Aquila the Eagle. The Milky Way passes through these constellations, so it's very rich. It's a lovely area to look at. The three brightest stars, Deneb in Cygnus, Vega in Lyra, and Altair in Aquila, make up what is called the Summer Triangle. Down to its lower left, rather beautifully, is a little constellation called Delphinus the Dolphin. A sort of a pentagon of stars makes up its head with a little arc tail. That's really rather nice. So, what will we be able to see? Well, you've either got to stay up late to see the planets, or get up pretty early, because they're basically seen over in the west or in the east, either after sunset or before dawn. Let's start with Jupiter. It passed behind the Sun on the 19th of June, and so, in July, it re-emerges into the pre-dawn sky, shining at magnitude about minus 1.9, when it's just low above the horizon in the morning sort of dawn light. You'll almost certainly need to use binoculars to pick it up, certainly early during the month. Please don't use them after the sun has risen. Obviously, as the month progresses, it will rise a little sooner than the sun, making it easier to spot. And a highlight will show how Mars and Jupiter get very close towards the end of the month. Well, we've been observing Saturn in the sky over the last few months. It's now well past opposition, so it'll be seen in the southwest after sunset, not at sadly at a very high elevation. It lies 11 degrees to the west of Spica, Alpha Virginis, and will appear slightly brighter with a yellowish hue. As it's moving further from us, or we're moving further from it, I suppose, its magnitude drops slightly, from plus 0.5 to plus 0.6 magnitudes. And again, the angular size decreases a little, from 17.6 to 17.1 arc seconds. Saturn has ended its retrograde motion across the sky. That's when it moves towards the west, and in fact remains virtually stationary halfway between Spica, Alpha Virginis, and Alpha Librae in Libra. The rings have opened out to about 70 degrees from the line of sight, and should the seeing be good, and that gets harder the lower Saturn is in the sky when we observe it, a small telescope should be able to see Cassini's division between two of the rings. And of course, there's a very good chance you'll pick up the brightest of Saturn's moons, which is, of course, Titan. Well, the other planets we'll see in the morning sky. Mars will lie about 7 degrees above the northeastern horizon half an hour before sunrise, as July begins. And binoculars should be able to pick it up in the pre-dawn sky. It begins a month with a magnitude of plus 1.5, increasing just a touch to plus 1.6 by the end of July. On the morning of the 6th, it will lie between the horns of Taurus, some 6 degrees to the left of a thin crescent moon. By July's end, Mars will rise some 2 hours before the Sun, having moved eastwards into Gemini on the 14th of the month. As we will see later, it passes very close to Jupiter towards the end of the month. Well, Mercury it passes between the Earth and the Sun, that's called inferior conjunction, on July the 9th, and will only really become visible in the pre-dawn sky during the last week of the month. However, it brightens quite rapidly as it comes to what is called greatest western elongation from the Sun on the 29th of July, when it reaches almost zeroth magnitude. On the previous morning, it will lie just 7 degrees below Mars. And finally, Venus. As July begins, Venus is about 25 degrees east of the Sun at sunset. But as the plane of the ecliptic is at a rather shallow angle to the horizon at this time of year, it will then be only about 11 degrees above the horizon. So to see it, you'll need a good low western horizon. As twilight really ends, its elevation will be just 5 degrees. But given its magnitude of minus 3.9, it should be fairly easily visible. And one of the highlights will show what happens on the 3rd of July. So what about a few highlights for the month? Well, I've got two here, really covering four objects that you could look for with binoculars, or in one case certainly you'd need a small telescope, throughout the whole of the month. And they are, of course, in the general region of that summer triangle. The first of them is in the constellation of Hercules. Four stars make up what is called the keystone, and if you move two-thirds of the way up from the lower right star of the keystone towards the upper right, you should see a little fuzzy blob in a pair of binoculars. And a telescope will show a beautiful tight ball of stars. It's called a globular cluster, and in the Messier catalogue, it's number 13. Then moving over towards Lyra, a little bit down to the left of Vega, you should spot with binoculars a double star. It's called Epsilon Lyrae. But with a telescope, if the seeing's good, you can actually see that each of those two stars is itself a double. So it's called the double double. And then again, in this part of the sky, there are two of the best planetary nebula that we can observe in the northern sky. Below Vega and Lyra are two quite bright stars, Beta and Gamma Lyrae, and between them, a little bit towards the right-hand one, is the planetary nebula M57. It's called the Ring Nebula because it looks a little like a smoke ring when seen with a small telescope, and you will need a telescope to pick this one out. On the other hand, below Cygnus in the constellation of Vulpecula is the Dumbbell Nebula, M27. And on a really dark, transparent night, you should be able to pick that out with 10 by 50 binoculars. Details of all of these objects can be found in what is called the Astronomical A-List. And if you go onto the Night Sky webpage of our observatory's website, you'll find that listed in the list of little tabs on the left. It's actually a list of 50 of what I regarded as the very best objects in the whole of the sky. So it includes those in both northern and southern hemispheres. And you'll find details about all of these objects in that particular section, the Astronomical A-List. If you want to spend about £10, you can actually get a printed version within a book called The Pocket Guide to Stars and Galaxies. I think it's just Pocket Guide to Stars and Galaxies, which I wrote some years ago. I mentioned Venus. Well, on the 3rd of July after sunset, although it'll be pretty low above the horizon, it actually lies in front of the Beehive Cluster, M44, in Cancer. That's an open cluster, quite a broad one, a very nice one. Binoculars would almost certainly be needed to pick it all out, and that may show some of the brighter stars of the cluster. If you use a telescope with higher magnification, a nice thing is that that actually darkens the background skylight, but leaves the stars at the same brightness. So that should help you pick up some of the stars. Certainly, if it's clear, I will attempt to photograph it on the night of July the 3rd. On July the 12th, a thin crescent moon joins Venus in the twilight sky, just below Regulus. And basically, the moon Regulus and Venus lie more or less in a straight line, within and just below the constellation of Leo the Lion. On July the 22nd, before dawn, Mars and Jupiter come to within a degree apart, 47 arc minutes to be precise. That's a very nice close grouping of the two. That evening, after sunset, Venus comes within 1.25 degrees of Regulus in Leo. That's about 45 minutes after sunset. You should be able to pick that out. And on July the 24th, given a reasonable-sized telescope, there's a very nice lineup of Saturn's moons. This will be after sunset. Saturn will be sort of down in the southwest, getting fairly low now towards the end of the month. And there's actually a straight line, not quite. Low down on the left is Iapetus, and you pass through Titan and some of the others, up to Dione, which is just above Saturn. So again, with a telescope and a camera of some sort, that would be a very nice imaging opportunity. And finally, on the last two mornings, about 45 minutes before sunrise, on the 30th and 31st, Jupiter, highest up, Mars, and then Mercury, low down, will all be visible together. Again, you'll almost certainly need binoculars to pick out Mercury, but don't use them once the sun has risen. So I do hope you see something during the month, even though the nights are not very long.
Thanks for that, Ian. Now, John Field tells us what you can see in the southern night sky.
Kia ora and welcome to the July Jodcast from Carter Observatory. With the winter solstice now past, we are moving through the coldest part of the year. Hopefully during this period there will be clear skies, allowing us long nights of observing. This month we have the brightest region of the Milky Way between Scorpius and Sagittarius in the southeast after sunset, and is well placed for viewing throughout the night. For its bright star clusters and nebulae, it is a great region for observing with just your eyes, or with binoculars or telescope. In many cultures, the Milky Way is seen as a heavenly park or river across the sky. Sitting at the apex of our evening Milky Way is Crux, the Southern Cross. The smallest of the 88 official constellations, Crux has become an icon of the southern sky. It has the appearance of a diamond kite with four bright stars along with a fifth fainter star inside the kite. To Maori and Aotearoa New Zealand, it is known as Te Pānga, the anchor. To one side is a dark patch in the Milky Way known as the Coalsack Nebula. This is a cold and dark cloud of interstellar material that may eventually form into star clusters. Running along the Milky Way towards the east are the two bright pointer stars, Alpha and Beta Centauri. These two stars mark the front hooves of Centaurus, the centaur. This is a mythical creature with the body of a horse and a human torso with arms replacing the neck and head. Northwards of Beta Centauri, you may spot a fuzzy star. This is Omega Centauri, a large globe of many millions of stars. Binoculars and telescopes reveal more detail and the fainter structure. Along the Milky Way in the north, we find the two celestial birds, Aquila the Eagle and Cygnus the Swan. Deneb, the brightest star in Cygnus, is low down on the northern horizon and marks the tail of the Swan. A line of stars runs up the Milky Way to the stunning telescopic double star, Albireo, marking the head. When viewed through a small telescope, you will see a beautiful pairing of pale yellow and blue stars. Although it is catalogued as Beta, the second brightest star in Cygnus, it is actually the fifth brightest star in the constellation. The brightest stars in Cygnus form a large and easily seen cross, and is commonly known as the Northern Cross. To the east of Albireo is Aquila, the Eagle. This constellation is marked by a distinct line of three stars sitting to the eastern side of the Milky Way, with the bright star Altair, the 12th brightest star in the night sky, in the centre. At a distance of 17 light-years, it is a nearby star to our solar system. The name Altair means the flying eagle in Arabic. In Greek mythology, Aquila represented an eagle carrying one of Zeus's thunderbolts. Straddling the Milky Way, Aquila contains a number of star clusters well within range of small telescopes. NGC 6709 and 6755 are two pretty open clusters of stars. There are a number of planetary nebulas in Aquila as well. This is a very short phase in the life of a solar mass star. Early observers called them planetary nebulas due to their circular appearance when viewed through a telescope. A third bright star nearby is Vega in the constellation of Lyra. Vega, Deneb and Altair form a large triangular asterism called here in the southern hemisphere the Winter Triangle. The planet Saturn is well placed for viewing in our evening sky. Sitting not far from the bright star Spica in Virgo, Saturn will have a yellow hue, while Spica is a distinct blue-white colour. Saturn was known as Cronos, the keeper of time and the father of the gods, and the harvest god in Greek mythology. Through binoculars you may see Saturn has an elongated appearance. A small telescope should easily reveal the rings and Saturn's largest moon Titan, and possibly one or more of the other moons. Venus is low in the west after sunset and it will appear as a brilliant star. Mars and Jupiter are in the morning sky, rising before the sun, and they will make a pretty pairing towards the end of the month. Aldebaran and Betelgeuse will be seen above these two planets. Both of these stars have a similar hue to Mars and are brighter. Mercury will join this grouping over the last days of the month. Thanks for listening into our Judcast, and the team at Carter Observatory wishes you clear skies.